What if I told you that a single invention has shaped human history more profoundly than perhaps any other, yet remains so ubiquitous we barely notice it? This humble material surrounds us daily, in our books, our money, our identification, even in the most intimate moments of hygiene. Paper, that deceptively simple sheet of pressed plant fibers, has enabled everything from religious texts to revolutionary manifestos, from love letters to legal contracts. Nicholas Bassman's exploration of this remarkable substance reveals how paper has been the silent foundation upon which civilizations have built their knowledge, governance, and culture. Celebrated by figures from Leonardo da Vinci to Thomas Edison, and still indispensable despite decades of digital prophecies about its demise, paper remains what Bassman calls our most versatile and indispensable material. Even tech mogul Bill Gates recognized its significance, spending $30.8 million for Leonardo's Codex Lester, the ultimate acknowledgement that some forms of paper transcend mere utility to become treasures of human achievement. Throughout history, humans have recorded information on various surfaces: stone, animal skins, clay tablets, palm leaves, and even knotted cords like the Incan quipu. But paper, with its unique combination of lightness, strength, absorbency, and abundance, revolutionized how knowledge could be transmitted and preserved. The invention emerged gradually in China, traditionally credited to Kai Lun in AD 105, though archaeological evidence suggests origins as early as 200 BC. Unlike papyrus, which merely consisted of laminated reed strips, true paper involves hydrogen bonding of pulverized cellulose fibers screened through a sieve, a fundamentally different process that creates a more versatile material capable of holding ink without bleeding or deteriorating. China's urgent need for this innovation arose from their extensive record-keeping requirements in an increasingly complex bureaucratic society. Previously, they had relied on cumbersome bamboo slips and expensive silk, materials that posed significant practical challenges. The philosopher Mozi complained that government documents were too many to be conveyed, while Emperor Qin Shi Huang reportedly read 120 pounds of bamboo slip reports daily. Paper's arrival coincided fortuitously with the introduction of the animal hair brush around 250 BC, creating the perfect writing system. This combination allowed for the development of calligraphy as both an art form and practical skill. Despite paper's advantages, other writing surfaces persisted for ceremonial and monumental purposes. Near Beijing, the Mountain of Stone Scriptures contains Buddhist sutras carved on 7,000 granite stelae over 5 centuries, representing both religious devotion and permanence. Yet paper's versatility led to innovations far beyond writing, from practical items like fans, umbrellas, lanterns, and kites, to more specialized uses such as toilet paper and lightweight armor. Paper money appeared during the Tang Dynasty, revolutionizing commerce. Marco Polo described Chinese paper clothing and elaborate funeral customs, where paper effigies, houses, and even servants were burned with the deceased, reflecting paper's deep integration into cultural practices. The journey of papermaking from China westward followed the Silk Road through Central Asia, reaching the Islamic world by the 8th century. Samarkand, a key trading center, became the crucial transfer point where Arabs learned papermaking techniques from Chinese craftsmen, possibly as spoils from the 751 Battle of Talas, though commercial exchange is equally plausible. The Arabs improved upon Chinese techniques by using linen rags instead of bark fiber and developing new sizing methods. By the mid-8th century, Arabs had mastered these essential techniques and established workshops throughout their territories, transforming intellectual life. Paper enabled scholars at Baghdad's House of Wisdom to translate and preserve Greek, Central Asian, and Indian knowledge into Arabic, creating vast libraries containing hundreds of thousands of volumes. The Ottoman Empire used paper to manage civilization's first modern bureaucracy, creating detailed records of everything from tax collection to military operations, demonstrating paper's crucial role in administrative efficiency. Japan's relationship with paper transcends mere utility, elevating the craft to a spiritual art form. During the Meiji Restoration, 1868 to 1912, a government survey counted 68,562 paper workshops across the nation. Today, fewer than 300 traditional papermakers remain, their survival uncertain despite government efforts to designate certain traditionally made papers as cultural property requiring urgent preservation. In Japan, washi, handmade paper, represents purity and spiritual expression. The Japanese took papermaking techniques from China in the 7th century and perfected them into a distinctive cultural practice. Pristine white paper symbolizes natural rhythms of birth and death, with paper streamers marking sacred spaces. The word kami means both paper and Shinto spirits, reflecting paper's spiritual significance. At Echizen's Okamoto Otaki Shrine, locals worship Kawakami Gozen, the goddess who lives above the stream, who, around 500 AD, taught papermaking to struggling rice farmers. Each May, during the Kami no Matsuri, Festival of God and Paper, her effigy travels through Echizen's 50 remaining washi studios. The author's journey to Japan revealed the extraordinary dedication of master papermakers like Ichibei Iwano IX, a living national treasure whose family passes down the Ichibei name based on skill rather than birth order. Observing father and son meticulously preparing kozo fiber, the author noted Iwano's emphasis that there are no shortcuts in papermaking. One must work with calmness and precision. When demonstrating his paper's strength, Iwano declared, "This paper will last 1,000 years." Following his father's wisdom, "Never be in a hurry and never skip regular steps." American artist Richard Flavin has established himself as one of the few craftsmen in Japan who makes washi paper entirely from his own kozo trees. While many Japanese papermakers now import their fiber from other Asian countries, Flavin supervises every step from harvest to finished sheet. His reseeding project began in 1990 on borrowed land, earning him the compliment of having a mind that is more Japanese-like than a Japanese. Originally from Boston, Flavin embraced the wabi-sabi aesthetic of simplicity and harmony with nature, maintaining about an acre with 500 kozo trees that produce enough fiber for his artistic needs. Paper first entered Europe during the Crusades through Muslim settlements in Spain and Sicily, marking a revolutionary shift from parchment and vellum. The oldest recorded European paper document is a deed of King Roger II of Sicily from 1102, written on paper likely imported from the Arab world. Initial resistance to this heathen technology remained strong among European nobility and clergy who viewed paper as both religiously suspect and materially inferior to traditional writing surfaces. In 1231, Frederick II of Sicily's Constitutions of Melfi formally decreed all official documents must be written on parchment, indicating paper was already in common use but considered less prestigious and durable for important records. Papermaking spread across Europe in a clear chronological pattern, following trade routes and cultural exchanges. Beginning in Spain in 1056 at Chitiva, a century earlier than previously thought, the craft moved to Italy with the first recorded mill in Fabriano in 1235. The technology then spread to France, 1348, Troyes, Austria, 1356, Wiener Neustadt, Germany, 1391, Nuremberg, and continued its journey through other European countries. This expansion eventually reached across the Atlantic to North America in 1690 with the Rittenhouse Mill near Philadelphia, and finally to Australia in 1818. The technology transferred workshop by workshop, with skilled workers, primarily Italian masters, crossing cultural boundaries to share their expertise, though often under strict guild regulations and secrecy agreements to protect valuable trade secrets. Ullmann Stromer's establishment of the first paper mill north of the Alps in Nuremberg in 1390 represents a crucial milestone in paper's European journey. He recruited Italian brothers Marco and Francisco Di Marcia for their expertise, documenting the entire process in his detailed business journal Puchel von mein Geschlecht und von Abenteuer. This rare medieval source reveals not only technical aspects of papermaking, but also labor relations, showing how he dealt with rebellious Italian workers who refused to install a third water wheel. Stromer briefly imprisoned them until they complied, highlighting the tension between technological innovation and worker resistance. The explosive demand for paper following Gutenberg's invention of movable type printing around 1450 led to extensive experimentation with alternative fibers. Jacob Christian Schaeffer's groundbreaking volumes, 1765 to 1771, documented experiments with 87 different materials, including wasps' nests, cotton grass, tree moss, potato skins, and various wood fibers. Each volume contained actual paper samples showing natural coloration, as chemical bleaching hadn't yet been invented. These experiments laid crucial groundwork for later industrial papermaking innovations. The industrialization of papermaking brought significant changes through machines like Nicholas Louis Robert's continuous paper machine, 1799, new chemical processes, wood pulp utilization, and bleaching agents. While these innovations dramatically increased production capacity, paper historian John Bidwell notes that quality often declined. If you're noticing paper, that probably means there's something wrong with it. Traditional hand papermaking as a commercial enterprise largely ended after World War II, though the craft survives through dedicated artisans who preserve historical techniques, recognizing that certain qualities of handmade paper, its texture, durability, and character, cannot be replicated by machines. The Stamp Act of 1765 represented a calculated British attempt to control colonial commerce through paper taxation. Prime Minister George Grenville's spiteful brilliance targeted every transaction requiring documentation, property deeds, legal pleadings, wills, university degrees, and more. The Act's 50 provisions included steep fees for practicing law, £10 sterling, and graduating college, £2, with newspapers required to purchase pre-stamped paper manufactured exclusively in England. Even playing cards and dice required tax stamps, affecting both commerce and leisure activities throughout the colonies. Newspapers emerged as powerful voices of opposition, transforming from mere news sources into platforms of resistance. The Connecticut Gazette boldly proclaimed that those surrendering liberty for safety deserve neither, while the Maryland Gazette dramatically renamed itself Expiring with uncertain hopes of a resurrection. William Bradford's Pennsylvania Journal printed a memorable Halloween edition featuring a skull and crossbones masthead framed by a gravestone outline, symbolizing the death of press freedom. Other papers followed suit, printing on unstamped paper in direct defiance of British authority. When the Act took effect on November 1, 1765, colonial resistance intensified. Courts refused to convene, administrative offices closed, and merchants pledged to boycott British goods. Violent protests erupted across the colonies, with angry mobs forcing stamp distributors to resign through intimidation and destruction of property. In Boston, protesters hung an effigy of stamp distributor Andrew Oliver from the Liberty Tree before burning his office to the ground. Parliament repealed the disastrous act by February 1766, but the damage was done. Colonial unity had been forged through resistance, establishing a pattern of collective action that would prove crucial in the coming revolution. During the revolution that followed a decade later, paper shortages became critically severe. Military needs consumed available supplies, leading to creative repurposing of existing materials. Thousands of unbound copies of Christopher Sauer's 1776 German Bible were transformed into musket cartridges by Continental soldiers. Similarly, Richard Peters Jr. discovered a cache of old sermons on defensive war that were converted to ammunition casings and fired away at the Battle of Monmouth against our retiring foe. The shortage became so acute that General Washington himself had to request Congress to ensure adequate paper supplies for military communications. In the post-war period, printer Isaiah Thomas built America's largest publishing enterprise in Worcester, Massachusetts, helping establish American independence in print as well as politics. By 1810, the United States had developed a robust papermaking industry with 195 mills, with Pennsylvania 60 mills and Massachusetts 40 mills leading production. America's insatiable appetite for paper fiber led to increasingly desperate measures for raw materials, including importing 44.5 million pounds of rags by 1857. Some entrepreneurs even resorted to importing linen wrappings stripped from Egyptian mummies, a practice that reportedly triggered a cholera outbreak when contaminated materials entered the papermaking process. This period marked America's transformation from a colonial consumer of British paper to a self-sufficient producer of its own information infrastructure. In 1799, 22-year-old Zenas Crane established the first paper mill west of the Connecticut River on the Housatonic in Dalton, Massachusetts. Starting as a modest one-vat operation, Crane built what would become America's most enduring papermaking dynasty. By 1879, Crane secured an exclusive contract to produce currency paper for the U.S. Treasury, a relationship that continues today. The company's success stemmed from unwavering quality standards and adaptability, producing everything from premium stationery used by presidents and royalty to security papers featuring innovative anti-counterfeiting measures like embedded silk threads. Through its Swedish subsidiary, Crane supplies currency paper to countries worldwide, producing approximately 35 million bills daily worth $635 million. Designed to withstand at least 4,000 double folds before tearing. Douglas Crane, a seventh-generation papermaker and company vice president, manages U.S. government products, including security features for American currency. Growing up overlooking the Dalton Mills, he joined the family business after briefly working in biomedical engineering. Crane deeply appreciates paper's physical properties, its feel, rattle, and remarkable strength derived from cellulose fiber's unique self-adhering quality through hydrogen bonding. Crane develops sophisticated anti-counterfeiting measures for currency, including a motion thread containing tiny images that appear to move when tilted, created through a system of approximately 50,000 microscopic lenses. Despite these advanced features, counterfeiting remains a persistent threat. During the author's visit, Douglas Crane showed a supernote, an exceptionally sophisticated counterfeit believed to be produced by a hostile nation like North Korea or Iran. Unlike typical counterfeits, these rare specimens replicate the paper composition, 75% cotton, 25% flax, security threads, and intaglio printing with remarkable accuracy. At Crane's facility, the manufacturing process includes sodium hydroxide treatment, digester boilers, pulper tanks, and gyro cleaners. The half stock produced is then sent to the currency mill, where the half stock is diluted to 0.6% fiber and 99.4% water before entering the papermaking machine, where proprietary security threads are inserted. The resulting American currency paper lasts 3.5 years in circulation compared to just 12 months for British notes. While Zenas Crane pioneered papermaking along the Housatonic River, he was followed by 65 other mills. In 1958, Kimberly Clark opened a massive tissue factory downstream in New Milford, Connecticut, producing one-and-done personal products like Kleenex, Kotex, Scott Towels, Huggies, and Cotton Mel. Though executives insist they're not papermakers, but producers of paper-based consumer products, these disposable hygiene items represent a significant paper market unlikely to become obsolete. Kimberly Clark began in 1872 in Neenah, Wisconsin, founded by four businessmen including John Alfred Kimberly and Charles B. Clark. They converted an old furniture factory on the Fox River into their first mill, producing premium paper from cotton and linen rags. After 6 years, they switched entirely to wood pulp, and by 1899 were producing 55 tons of newsprint daily. Frank J. Sensenbrenner, Kimberly Clark's general manager, hired Austrian chemist Ernst Mahler in 1914 to lead research and development. His first achievement was developing rhodoplate, a bleached stock perfect for rotogravure printing that eliminated lignin and prevented smudging. Of greater significance was Mahler's development of crepe cellulose wadding, initially exploring alternatives to increasingly expensive cotton. By chemically removing lignin from spruce pulp while preserving fiber length, he created the absorbent material cellucotton, which became essential for surgical dressings and gas mask filters during World War I. After World War I ended, Kimberly Clark faced a massive surplus of cellucotton. Walter W. Luque, hired from Sears, discovered letters from Army nurses who had repurposed the surgical dressings for feminine hygiene. This led to the creation of Kotex sanitary napkins in 1920, marketed discreetly with images of nurses and medical endorsements. By 1924, the company transformed the thin cellucotton gas mask linings into Kleenex facial tissues, initially marketed for removing cold cream, but quickly adopted as handkerchief replacements. Among paper innovations, toilet paper stands as perhaps the most indispensable. Joseph C. Gaietti produced America's first commercial toilet paper in 1857, selling flat packages of medicated paper treated with aloe, marketed as therapeutic and for the prevention of piles. The modern era began in 1871 when Seth Wheeler patented rolled perforated paper, leading to the Scott Paper Company's establishment in 1879 by brothers E. Irvin and Clarence Scott. Today, American companies produce over 7 billion rolls annually, 22.3 per person, with the average consumer using 57 sheets daily, according to Procter & Gamble. Shakespeare's poetic lines about giving airy nothing a local habitation and a name aptly describe how creative minds transform imagination into tangible form through paper. Scholarly interest in notebooks kept by artists, writers, scientists, and other thinkers as windows into the creative process emerged relatively recently, beginning in the late 19th century. Leonardo da Vinci stands as the consummate practitioner of thinking on paper, his birth in 1452 coinciding precisely with Gutenberg's development of movable type. As Martin Kemp of Oxford University observed, while others had sketched before Leonardo, no one used paper as a laboratory for thinking on his scale. Despite paper's limited availability in 15th century Europe, Leonardo covered pages with an impetuous cascade of observations, visualized thoughts, brainstormed alternatives, theories, polemics, and debates across virtually every branch of knowledge. This extraordinary productivity would have been impossible without paper. Parchment was too scarce to use so freely, and ephemeral media like tile wouldn't have allowed the accumulation of material essential to his process. What we know of Leonardo's genius survives primarily through his private notebooks, as only about 20 paintings and no finished sculptures remain. His enormous body of drawings, more than 4,000 pieces, provides the key to understanding his mind, though sadly about 80% of what once existed has been lost. Beethoven's compositional genius similarly lay in his ability to transform ordinary musical ideas into sublime works through extensive refinement on paper. Even when clinically deaf, 1818-27, he created revolutionary sounds he could hear only in his inner ear. Paper was essential to his process. He compulsively documented thousands of pages of musical ideas, often putting melodic fragments through 60-70 variations before finalizing them. His complete works fill about 8,000 pages, yet his sketches run even longer. From adolescence, Beethoven refined tunes by moving notes around on paper rather than testing them on keyboard. He constantly bought manuscript paper, stitched sheets together when necessary, and carried notebooks everywhere, quoting Joan of Arc, "Without my banner, I dare not come." Throughout his frequent relocations, Beethoven insisted his growing cache of sketches move with him. At his death in 1827, over 50 volumes plus hundreds of unbound leaves dating back to 1792 were found in his chaotic apartment. As the 21st century progressed, paper manufacturers faced unprecedented challenges. Rising e-book popularity, declining newspaper circulation, soaring energy costs, increased recycling demands, aging equipment, foreign competition, uncertain markets, and the transition to electronic record keeping. The industry's response to these challenges would determine which companies survived in this changing landscape. When George H. Glatfelter II became CEO of P.H. Glatfelter, Inc. in 1998, he foresaw the coming consolidation of the paper industry. Over the next dozen years, 120 North American paper mills would close, with 240,000 jobs lost. Glatfelter responded by strategically repositioning his family's 150-year-old company, moving beyond traditional book papers into specialized niche markets. The challenge was knowing when to enter the industry cycle and when to back off. Throughout the 1990s, many companies overinvested in capacity while waiting for demand upswings that never materialized. When interviewing for CEO, Glatfelter told the board that the company needed to become global and dominate niche markets rather than merely dabble in them. This vision transformed the company while maintaining its core values of integrity and respect. Despite these industrial challenges, paper's cultural significance remains undiminished. Robert Darnton, Harvard University's librarian overseeing 17 million volumes across 73 collections, firmly rejects notions of book obsolescence. His pioneering work in Histoire du Livre began in 1965 amid a sea of paper in Neuchâtel, Switzerland, where he discovered the archives of the Société Typographique de Neuchâtel containing 50,000 letters about the book trade. Though initially researching Jacques-Pierre Brissot for a biography, Darnton became fascinated by the rich documentation about papermaking, publishing, and distribution. "I found to my amazement that people are talking about paper all the time," he explains, noting evidence of a paper consciousness among not just professionals, but readers who complained about paper quality in books. The archives revealed an entire world of paper, with discussions about rag quality, water sources, and manufacturing processes. Perhaps the most poignant testament to paper's enduring significance came after the September 11, 2001 attacks. Among the most haunting images was the paper rain of thousands of documents released when the Twin Towers collapsed. These fragments, scorched but recognizable, were the only artifacts to emerge from the buildings in identifiable form, landing hip-deep near Ground Zero and spreading across New York City and into New Jersey. Jan Seidler Ramirez, chief curator of the National September 11 Memorial and Museum, describes paper as ubiquitous in their exhibition plan. Given the complete crippling of telephone and electrical systems, paper becomes the only urgent and most efficient mode of communication. Thank God for paper, because we turn to it again and again. Among their most poignant acquisitions, a blood-stained note reading 84th floor, West Office, 12 people trapped, later matched through DNA to a financial services worker who perished trying to save colleagues. In our increasingly digital world, paper remains the most tangible connection to our humanity, recording our thoughts, preserving our history, and bearing witness to our most profound moments of tragedy and triumph. As Bass Baines eloquently demonstrates, paper is far more than a mere substrate for information. It is the material that has shaped civilization itself.